Фальче, bienvenue.
Bienvenido.
Добродошли.
Magandang araw sa inyo.
Welcome.
Добро пожаловать.
欢迎收听 Here on Earth.
Here on Earth.
Here on Earth.
Добро пожаловать to Here on Earth.
Bienvenido a Here on Earth.
Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice has made four trips to the Middle East in the past 4 months, hoping to jumpstart the stalled peace process. In January, she urged a two-state solution. In February, she facilitated a trilateral meeting between Israeli Prime Minister Olmert and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. But despite such efforts, with no clear agenda, the two sides remain far apart, and the U.S.-backed roadmap to peace remains stalled. Rice recently admitted to Israeli press that no real progress has been made.
My approach has been, I admit, careful. It's been step by step. I've not been willing to try for the big bang. I don't think that that's where we are. I think there are a lot of moving pieces here. I think the Palestinian Unity Government was a new factor as of a month ago. And so to take the time to talk to the parties on the basis of the same questions and same issues, I think is well worth the time, and that's what I'm going to try to do, and I can't promise you that I won't have to do that again.
Meanwhile, a delegation of peace activists from the Middle East, three women from Jerusalem, a Christian Palestinian, a Muslim, and a Jew, are currently touring the United States, having made a commitment to address American audiences about their work and what must be done to improve today's deteriorating situation. I'm Jean Faraca. You're listening to Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. This hour, three women from Jerusalem, partners for peace. How often have you heard of Israelis and Palestinians working together to build a new future? Do such grassroots efforts make any difference in the long run, do you think? What is the role of ordinary citizens in bringing a lasting and just peace to the Middle East? We're at 1-800-642-1234. Again, 1-800-642-1234. And if you're listening online, please send your messages to us by email. The address is hereonearth@wpr.org. With me in the studio, three women from Jerusalem. Tal Dor, who is a Jewish Israeli born in Haifa.
Hello.
Hello, Tal. For 6 years, she was executive director of a joint Jewish-Palestinian grassroots organization called, help me with this,
Ma'apach Tahrir.
Beautiful. Developing leadership and social justice in disempowered communities in Israel. And with us as well, Huda Abu Arkoub.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a Muslim Palestinian working as educational consultant with the Ministry of Education of the Palestinian National Authority and a grassroots activist for gender equity and human rights.
Salam.
Salam. And also with us, Amal Nassar. She is a Christian Palestinian working as a nurse in Bethlehem and a founding member of Tent of Nations, a project inviting Palestinians, Israelis, and international visitors to focus on coexistence, peace, and nonviolence.
Hello.
Amal, welcome to Here on Earth.
Thank you.
Well, what an experiment this has been for the three of you. You met, 10 days ago at Charles de Gaulle Airport?
Mm-hmm.
And you've been traveling together since April the 9th throughout the United States.
April the 6th.
So what has this been like?
It's been fun, but intense. We've been in and off many places. We've been speaking. We think of ourselves that like speaking machines, but we are very excited about it.
And in what way are you excited? What have been the revelations among you since, you know, you can't keep women from talking together. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you've been talking on the air, in lecture halls, and also among yourselves.
I always say you can't keep women from doing politics, but that everything is political. And I think this tour is a challenge for us to have our own process.
Mm-hmm.
in between the meetings and the showing the our dynamics and using it to become more active and more partners and have more partnership when we go back to do things together.
Mm-hmm. And Amal?
For me, I would like to thank Partner for Peace to give me this opportunity to come here and inform people what is happening in Palestine, Bethlehem, and really it's a challenge for me that to raise up awareness and to tell people what I'm going I'm working to achieve peace and justice back home.
Well, I want to know what the rough spots have been. Where on what occasions have you had to invoke your own skills in negotiations and conflict resolution?
One of my rough spots was in editorial meeting with the Chicago Sun-Times. Those people were very rigid, very cold. They went to get into questions. They don't want to listen to us. They want to prove their point of view through asking us questions. So we made them listen to us for more than half an hour, I guess, which was too much for them, but they listened to us. We had the final say in what we were saying to them. We don't know what they are going to write, or even if they are going to care to write it. But to me, we managed to get into other people's bubbles and talk to them, make them listen to us.
And implies that Americans are not particularly enlightened about the real situation that you yourselves have been through, and that they have a certain mindset that you've been attempting to penetrate.
Yeah.
Am I right?
It's a variety. You cannot make one big generalization. There is from our meetings. Was quite interesting to see that there is a big group that don't know much about it, or they know only what they see in the media, maybe have never spoken to people, maybe never met Palestinians, maybe never met Israeli activists. And for them, it was always very exciting for us to see their reaction, and many people got very excited. And there is a group that disagree with us, that find that what we are saying is bringing out only one side and believe that what we are saying is not the whole picture. And with them, it's usually more challenging for us to show that, to stand and believe behind what we are saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes.
People here from America, from Europe, they have a really a very big image about the Holy Land. And then when they come to visit the holy places, they concentrate on visiting holy places. But they don't much meet the living stones, which is really important. To know what kind of situation they are going, these living stones.
What do you mean by that? I like that term, the living stones.
The living stones, the people who are living under these circumstances. And it's important for us that people come and not only visit the holy places, also to find a chance to meet the living stones. And this is important for us.
We have a caller who joins us from Glendale. Hello, thank you for your call. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a question for Ms. D'Or, if I pronounce it, and I'm sorry if I mispronounce your name. I'm reading from the interview that you had in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel of this past Friday, where you used the term, and again, pardon my mispronouncing, Nakba?
Yeah.
Catastrophe?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a student at UWM
and
the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and I've taken a number of courses in Arabic history. And let me suggest that the real catastrophe of why there is no Palestinian or Arab state today is the aggression that took place by Jordan, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Lebanon, and other states in May 1948, when they violated international law and invaded the Palestinian state with the intent to destroy mm-hmm. Israel that your grandfather fought so hard for.
Okay.
So how can you just...
We got it. Taldor.
I take your suggestion, but I don't agree with it completely because I can only speak from a point of view of an Israeli. I am not a Jordanian. I am not an Egyptian. I speak about my responsibility in the whole picture. I suggest to you to speak about your responsibility as an American. Speak about your responsibility of what's going on in Iraq. Speak about your responsibility of what's going on in Israel and Palestine. And I will speak about my responsibility and I will learn the big picture, but I will not close my eyes to my responsibility, to my part in this narrative.
Tell us a little bit, since the Glendale caller invoked your grandfather, about your background, Tal. Your grandfather was a Zionist. He is a Zionist. He fought in the 1948 war. And you grew up in South Africa.
No, I grew up in Haifa.
In Haifa.
I grew up to two South African parents. And I grew up in a home that spoke about that racism is wrong and the apartheid was wrong and that people are equal. And I grew up on the stories of living in South Africa. But when I realized that everyone around me is only Jewish and that I don't have Palestinian friends and that I don't know Palestinians, then I realized that something is wrong. I realized that I want to live in a different reality where my friends are not only Jewish and not only white. And I, this is my call now. My call now is to live together, is to work together, and to recognize the Nakba, the Palestinian catastrophe, as part of my narrative as well. It's part of my history as well, and I have to recognize it. I have to speak about it. I have to know about it. I have to know the details, and I have to act accordingly.
This term, Nakba, who wants to speak to the sense of the 1948 war as the Palestinian catastrophe?
To me, as Palestinian, whom her family was deported from their land in 1948, the Nakba is a catastrophe. Helpless people, no structure whatsoever, were taking advantage of everyone. I'm also critical of the whole picture, the Arab situation at that time. I know that they were colonized by British and France at that time. They actually, the Arab people didn't have a say in what was happening because the leaders were occupied. The country itself, Egypt and Jordan, were under the British mandate. But for me, it's a catastrophe because it took everything from my family. It took their power, their land, their home, their dignity, everything. They became refugees after they were landlords. They had their own source of power, economies, socially, everything. To me, this is a catastrophe. When my people now, 5 million people living in refugee camps under severe conditions, inhuman conditions in Lebanon, in Jordan, everywhere, when my people have no right, no voice even to vote for a democratically elected government in Palestine, when their rights are not recognized.
Well, wait a minute. I thought that you elected Hamas in the last...
Yes.
Elections.
Yeah, the Palestinians who live in the West Bank and Gaza, but not the Palestinians who live outside. The refugee, the Palestinians who are refugees living in refugee camps, and they are more than 5 million Palestinians.
Even the Palestinians who elected Hamas are punished now for their democratic elections.
Yeah.
They are punished, and while Condoleezza Rice is speaking about the process and they're taking time and step by step, people are starving, so she can allow herself to speak about a process and to take one step at a time, but some people back home cannot allow themselves this slow process.
And what about you, Amal? Where is your position in all of this? What is your story?
My story is about, my concern is about land and people. And part of occupation, Israeli occupation, we have a problem of land confiscation. And the wall as well as part of confiscating land. My family have got owned some a piece of land southwest of Bethlehem, 9 kilometers. And this land is located 900 meters above the sea level. And this land is surrounded by 4 Israeli settlements. The land was bought in 1916 and registered in 1924. And in 1991, the Israeli military forces proclaimed this land as a state land. Uh-huh. So we have to challenge this problem and to go to the court, into the court, to prove that it to go to a legal battle to prove that it's our land, it's a private land, it's not a state land. And that's why we donated.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. We have to take a break. We'll continue in just a moment. Okay. I'm Jean Faraca. This is Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. Obviously, the conflict in the Middle East is about land and who owns the land and who has the right to occupy it. We have with us three women from Jerusalem who are partners for peace. They're currently on tour in the United States, sharing their experiences and focusing on coexistence and the path to peace. And you can join us by calling 1-800-642-1234. I'm Jean Faraca. HereOnEarth.org is the perfect companion to Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. Learn more about our guests, topics, and the music we feature. You can subscribe to our podcast, post a message, and interact with other listeners. Log on to HereOnEarth.org and join us live Monday through Friday at 3 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include the Habitat Restore, presenting an Earth Day celebration Saturday, April 21st, noon to 4 p.m., featuring 20 exhibition booths with information on green building, sustainable living, and recycling options. Information at restoredane.org.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Madison Youth Choirs presenting The Composer's Craft Part 2, featuring the Boulder Acoustic Society Sunday, April 29th at the MATC Mitby Theater. Tickets available at madisonyouthchoirs.org.
I'm Jean Faraca. You're listening to Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. This hour, we are talking with three women from Jerusalem who are here touring the United States. They'll be speaking this evening, as a matter of fact. I'll give you more information about that later. They're sponsored by Partners for Peace, and they're touring the United States, raising awareness of what it's like to cope with war and violence in an ongoing way, and what it will take to jumpstart the peace process, which is stalled at the present time. We're at 1-800-642-1234. Amal, we were talking about your particular situation, which is a very interesting one. You're a Christian Palestinian who is fighting for the right to keep your land.
Yes.
The land is in Bethlehem?
The land is 9 kilometers south of southwest of Bethlehem. And now it's considered it's a West Bank and the occupied territories. But the area of the land that is located now is under it's in a sea zone. You know, we have a division inside the West Bank, A, B, and C. Mm. And C is under Israeli control. And the land on top of hill where 4 settlements encircled the land. So we have a problem. I told you that in 1991, military Israeli forces, they proclaimed the land as a state land. not a private property. But we have to challenge this problem and to go into a legal battle to prove that this land it's a private property, is not a state land. From 1991 until now, we have to go on this process. Every time of the court session meeting, we have to prove a new document, new paper. Every time they ask, they keep postponing the case, mm-hmm. that we give up and they leave. As many Palestinian Christians, they left because of this problem. Mm. They cannot afford to defend the land. And they give up quickly, they leave the land.
Now, but let me understand something, though. This is the land where you founded Tent of Nations?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's on 100 acres of land that your family owns in the occupied West Bank. Your grandfather purchased the property in 1917 and moved his family from the old city of Bethlehem, where your ancestors have lived for generations.
Yes.
Your land is now surrounded by four illegal Israeli settlements. Built after Israel occupied the West Bank in 1967. Yes. And as you've been explaining to us, this is an ongoing legal battle to maintain the land. You actually were attacked at one point in 2002 by Israeli settlers who uprooted your 250
olive trees, mm-hmm. And smashed the tanks of water that we are, because we don't have water on the land. We have the cistern. We dug our own cistern in order to keep collect the rainfall. For the summertime, because this project Tent of Nations is about to invite people building bridges together for understanding, dialogue, reconciliation to achieve peace, because we invite people from different parts of the world, internationals and local, to come together to talk about their own background and culture, that we know more about each other.
Uh-huh. So you're allowed to stay on the land. You're still on the land. You're occupying.
Yes, we are still on the land, doing this project, working with children, young people, to be connected to the land, not to leave the land.
Mm-hmm. So. And you call it Tent of Nations, which is in fulfillment of your grandfather's vision of what would be possible.
He wanted to make this place a meeting point for local and internationals to come together to achieve reconciliation and peace.
So in a way, I see that as a kind of metaphor for the whole embattled situation. Mm-hmm. Do the rest of you, what do you think about this?
Yeah, that's a very relevant metaphor, actually, because this is what we do. We are fighting to have a place to live on, and with the wall, building the wall, now more and more land was confiscated. You have farmers who've been living on their on the olive oil industry for ages. It's been in their families for generations. Now they go to the south to buy olive oil. They lost everything.
Mm. Your family also had olive trees uprooted.
In 1948, where we had the land before 1948,
Uh-huh. Well, what is the way, as you have talked among yourselves, and as each of you has envisioned a path to the future, let's talk about how you see what is possible. Obviously, Israel is there to stay, and obviously the Palestinians have also sent down roots. They're not going to be sent into diaspora. So there's only one land.
Mm-hmm.
How can this be reconciled? What is your vision for what is possible?
For me as a Christian, we have to make compromises from both sides, because this is a small spot of area that has a lot of conflict since generation, and we have to come to an end, to end, a positive end, to stop this conflict, to stop this bloodshedding, every day killing. We have to work hard to explain to people that we want to live as a human being, as other nations living equally. We have to convince people that we have to share the land, to live together without occupation, without segregation. And this is very important to me as Palestinian Christian.
We have a caller who joins us from Waukesha. Hello, Boyd.
Hi, Jean. Thanks for taking my call. Really good show. Hello, ladies. Here's my question. I think one thing we can all agree on, Jean, you as well, is that with this, with the conflict of the Arab-Israeli dilemma, it's, I think 95% of it, it's political in nature. My question is this. When the smoke is cleared, which I think eventually will happen, because I think something will, the peace process will get going, the toughest nut to crack in all this is, what do you do about Jerusalem? Because from my studies, all three of the monotheist religions feel they have a divine claim to that city. What do you do? Because I think that's the last hurdle, but the toughest hurdle to get over. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your call. Which one of you wants to tackle that? Do you each have a different solution?
I want to say my point of view towards Jerusalem.
Amal the Christian.
Yes. From my point of view as Christian Palestinian, I would like to see Jerusalem for all nations, because historically,
like your tent of nations, yes. like your family's land.
Yes, because all people, it has not to be limited to any nation in the world. Mm. It should be for all religion, for all nations in the world. Internationals should control Jerusalem, that everyone has to come free, peaceful. It has to be peaceful Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. We want to see. I have the vision of that.
My vision is not that international will control it, but that we will control it together. I think Jerusalem is maybe one. It's not the most. It's not the only problem between the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Jerusalem can be shared. There are other. We can share the land, not only Jerusalem. We can work together, we can live together, we can do things together only if we met, only if we did cross these borders, cross these boundaries, cross the segregation, cross the wall, cross the checkpoints. If we started to meet and to do things together and put facts on the ground, then we will see that we can share everything, and we could share a vision, and we could share a present and a future.
Huda, you are currently denied Jerusalem residency, even though you were born there, and you can't travel freely to the city of your birth. Why is that?
Because this is the policy of the Israeli occupation forces to deport and to push every Palestinian, not Muslim or every Muslim, every Palestinian lives in Jerusalem, faces legal ordeals sometimes in order to prove that he lives in Jerusalem. I didn't live in Jerusalem. I was born and I was raised in Hebron. I have family in Jerusalem that I can't visit. To me, Jerusalem is not united, as they say, they try to claim now. And everyone in the world has a divine claim in Jerusalem. Jerusalem for everyone. I want to go to my birthplace and celebrate that birth. Mm. I want to be able to go to Jerusalem wherever I want without having to have to go through checkpoints or get a permit in order to go to Jerusalem. Jerusalem to me is me.
I was in Jerusalem not too long ago, a year ago last fall, and I was very moved to be there. Mm-hmm. I'm Christian. I followed the along the Way of the Cross, yes. which, of course, goes right through the Arab Quarter. Mm-hmm. And all along, when I got to the ultimate point...
You mean the
point,
Muslim Quarter?
The Muslim Quarter.
There is a Muslim Quarter, Christian Quarter, Jewish Quarter, Armenian.
I went through the Muslim
yeah.
Quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, mm-hmm. to follow the Way of the Cross.
Yeah.
And when I got to the penultimate station of the cross, mm-hmm. We heard the call to prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from the Alaska Mosque.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this feeling that, you know, this tremendous convergence, what a PowerPoint mm-hmm. Jerusalem is, this convergence of all three faiths. And it's not just three. You see so many more sects,
yes.
the Coptic Christians and the Armenian Christians and mm-hmm. And Hasidic Jews. And it was an astonishing convergence. And I thought, one more step, just one more step, and we'll make it, you know?
Yeah,
and yet,
true.
So close and yet so far.
Yeah. At
so
the
far.
Same time, did you see the cameras everywhere? Did yeah, you see the soldiers changes. Everywhere?
Absolutely.
This is,
and the guns.
This
guns.
Is the problem. This is the problem that we are living in very militaristic society. And for people are speaking about Jerusalem as a holy place while we are actually keeping onto it in a very violent way.
Mm-hmm.
Just so people could speak about Jerusalem in this passion. And I think people need to understand, Amal always says, so what is it worth? What? Why are you Christian if you don't get involved? Why mm-hmm. are you... And I think people should understand that we in the land, we don't want to be anymore the soldiers,
well, yeah.
everybody's soldiers.
Yeah.
We have a caller from Wausau coming in next, Norma. Hi, Norma. Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I would just like to thank the wonderful, wonderful ladies for coming on and telling the truth about what's going on over there.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My daughter has married a Palestinian,
mm-hmm.
and the horrific sights that she saw, she's been over there three times now, and the family, his extended family, they're starving to death. They have no water rights. They can't work. And my father, her father-in-law is a PhD at the University of mm-hmm. Jerusalem, and he can't even go to work.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the Israeli soldiers took their car keys from them in the desert and left them in the desert. Now, the man is 75 years old, and the mother is 55.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's the most horrendous thing. And not only that, they strip-searched my daughter at
yes.
the airport because she was married to a Palestinian and the grandchildren
mm-hmm.
and left the mess all over the floor, and she almost missed her plane. I mean, it's just horrendous. My son-in-law... at 12 years old, was walking home from school and got beaten up by Israeli soldiers just because he wasn't doing anything wrong, badly
yeah.
beaten up.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you for coming over and telling the truth, because the American people do not hear the truth
yeah.
of what's going on over there. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Noma.
Is there any way we can reach a point where we don't need to be right, no matter what side we're on? Is it possible to bear witness to one another, the righteousness of one another's grievances? Can
I
we?
I think if we stop discussing who is right and who is wrong and start discussing the power dynamic, start discussing, let's check out the power dynamic. Let's check out who is being occupied and who is occupying. Let's not speak about who is ultimately right and who is ultimately wrong. And then take responsibility from this place of power dynamic. I have a different responsibility than Huda, but Huda has exactly the same amount of responsibility, but in a different point of view, in a different from a different way, from a different place in the power dynamic. I have to take a stronger step. I have to take a step that is coming from the powerful side, from the side that is occupying. And if we start speaking about the power dynamic, we will stop talking about who is right and being stuck in the righteousness of this of our issue.
We need an honest broker.
An honest broker?
Yeah.
Can you name somebody you think it would be a good candidate?
But United States wanted to be the honest broker.
They can't be.
But they are not. They are not fair, and they are not doing that. So we are hoping for what Skondi is doing now is too late. I think they are doing the same mistake that Clinton did when they, at the end of their time, remembered that there is an issue in the Middle East. So we are hoping that another administration will play the role of an honest broker.
We're talking this hour with three women from Jerusalem. They are Partners for Peace. They'll be speaking tonight at the University of Wisconsin campus in the Humanities Building, room 2650, from 7 to 9 p.m. We'll continue our conversation with them in just a moment. You're welcome to join us. We're at 1-800-642-1234. What is the role of the United States? Is it possible that we could be the peace brokers? Or will the Saudis enter the situation and bring it forward? Why is it that the United States seems so disengaged? And what about the war in Iraq? Can we talk about peace in the Middle East when we're waging war in Iraq? 1-800-642-1234. I'm Jean Faraca. You're listening to Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders is the interactive radio show that features voices from all over the world. How about yours? The program airs live weekday afternoons at 3 Central Time, and podcast listeners can stream the show at our website, hereonearth.org. To join the conversation, call toll-free in the United States and Canada, 1-800-642-1234. Elsewhere, drop us an email, hereonearth@wpr.org. Leave your phone number, and we'll call you back. You can also post your thoughts at our web forum or leave a message at my blog. We're Radio Without Borders, Here on Earth, from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Jean Faraca. You're listening to Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. This hour, we are talking with three women from Jerusalem, one a Christian, one a Palestinian, no, two Palestinians, a Christian Palestinian, a Muslim, and a Jew. They are Partners for Peace. This is the 9th or the 11th? 13th. Well, maybe it's a lucky 13.
Yeah.
That Partners for Peace has sponsored such a tour. I can feel the tension in the conversation, even that we're having amongst ourselves. It's very thorny. It takes a lot of courage for each of you to come forward. I'm wondering if you have any sense of yourselves as women peacemakers. You know, the seemingly entrenched conflict in Northern Ireland, we've just seen a breakthrough. May the 9th, I believe, May the 8th, I'm not sure of the date, the new government will come to power, shared power. Women were very much behind that long, long struggle. How do you see yourselves vis-a-vis this whole process as women?
First of all, I think it's also a lot of maybe brave to speak, but it's also that we keep giving each other the space to talk. So the first few seconds of silence is because we are trying to check out who is the one that would like to answer, and giving the space and not occupying the air. Women also back home have a very big role in ending the occupation and in the struggle. There are many feminist movements and many combined Jewish-Palestinian feminist movements that say that we want to speak in a different language. We want to speak in a different, in a civic, feminine language, not in a language of sexism and war and militarist. We can see that there are movements like the Four Mothers that demonstrated and insisted to get the soldiers out of Lebanon. We can see the women like Women in Black that stand in major junctions every Friday and demonstrate and actually demonstrate around the world. We can see Coalition for Women, we can see Women to Women, we can see many associations that are based on the feminist ideology, and actually we can see a lot of grassroots organizations that are following the feminist language, like Zohrot, like Ma'apach, like the anarchists, that are saying we want to speak a different language, we want to let, we want men and women to speak a different language.
We also have reported on many such initiatives on this program. We were talking about them earlier today at our meeting and remembering how many there have been that have come to our attention and that we have reported on. And yet things don't seem to move, in spite of the fact that so many of you are working against your own self-interest in some cases in order to achieve a transcendent harmony. And yet at the top, we see things getting worse instead of better. What is the relationship between grassroots movements such as your own and policymaking? How can you see reaching a tipping point, if you'll forgive, that can really influence the policies at the top and the where you can really get Palestinians to recognize Israel and so forth? The sticking points.
Yeah. I think women in the resistance movement were in the front lines when it comes to the grassroots level. How to infiltrate to the upper level is going to take time. We are not the only agents of change in the society, and we have change imposed on us from outside. So to us, when I tell the American people that let your government get off our backs, I mean it. The imposed change on us with no consideration to our history or culture is complicating things to us. Women are...
So if I understand you correctly, then you don't want the U.S. to be a broker.
We want them to be an honest broker. We don't want them to back the powerful, the ones who have the power over the others. We don't want them to back the occupation. They are giving them $6 billion. The Americans giving the Israeli government $6 billion in form of weapons. The only recollection of the Palestinian children in the streets of the United States or image is the bomb that is written on it, made in USA. I mean, this has to change something. You don't want more and more hatred towards the American people. And fortunately enough, the people who live under this severe hardships, they can make the distinction between the government and the people. So that's why we are speaking to the people here. Move, do something, take an action, change. You have more luxury, more privileges to practice in order to change the upper level.
So that's your purpose, really,
in
the U.S. tour.
In the U.S.
Okay. We have a Milwaukee caller joining us, Bob from Milwaukee. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi, Jean. Great show. And I really appreciate what these women are doing here. And their feeling and their sincerity is coming through. And the one thing that I can honestly say that I've had personal experience in dialogue with Muslims and Palestinian people in the Milwaukee area, I'm Jewish, and the people-to-people aspects of this thing are beautiful and wonderful. The problem is, in order what these gals say, and I thank them for coming and saying it, is that we need a peaceful atmosphere in order to generate, a peace process. And if we could, I'm sure if they would have an effect on particularly Hamas to agree to the three things that the international community wants, but the main thing, of course, is stopping the violence, then the checkpoints, the occupation, and all these things will fall into place. There's no question about that. I followed this carefully from scholars and lay people for years now.
But Hamas did. did actually offer the truth more than three times. But the media, the mainstream media, doesn't want to focus on that. They want just to continue labeling Hamas as a terrorist government. Hamas, since they decided to go, and I'm not a big fan of Hamas as a woman, since they decided to get into the political game, they stopped all their violent, between quote-unquote, violent actions against Israel. What they are asking for is an equal opportunity for both sides to stop the violence. You can't stop, you can't start talking while you are being bombed from the air. Israel is controlling the air. So if we stop suicide bombing, we are still being bombed from the air. Mm. So there is no equality, and what Hamas is seeking is the stopping of all violent actions from both sides on equal basis.
Which one of you talked about you can't have peace before you have justice?
Both.
Tal. Mm. Mm. Tell us about that.
I think the discourse of peace is can be dangerous because we don't ask the questions of who is paying the price. And it's very easy to say, I want peace. I live in Tel Aviv, I want peace. I don't know what's happening on the other side. And when I say... and when I wrote that I believe that there cannot be peace without justice, I meant that we have to speak about equal rights. We have to speak about the end of the occupation. People cannot speak about peace while it's coming on others' expense. Mm-hmm. Israelis cannot speak about peace while the Palestinians are paying the price for the so-called peace.
And what do you have to say to your fellow Israelis when they, I mean, you've talked about the power dynamic. It's clear that Israel has the advantage when it comes to military power, but, and perhaps political power. But what about the fear that you live in?
Mm-hmm.
And how does that disempower you? Mm-hmm. And how does it contribute to the entrenchment of the conflict? How do you address the fear?
You want to answer?
From my point of view, I see that Israel has really the power, and they are controlling everything. They are weaponed, but still they are full of fear. How I see it, because I feel that the fear they have, that's why they decided to build the wall. Because fear built walls, and to build a wall, so you don't have really the will to do peace, because we live in a small spot of the world, and with a lot of conflict. But when you build a wall, you are separating people. You are not. You don't have the will to do peace,
mm-hmm.
and this is a fear built wall. I don't think that the Israelis now, they are living safe or in security, because they are still full of fear that somebody will come. Somebody will, always full of fear. And for me as a Christian, I say that hope build bridge, not build wall.
Hmm. Can I just add maybe to this that some of the fear is not realistic. Some of the fear I was taught was not even true. I was scared. I was taught to be scared of all Palestinians. I was taught to be scared to go to Palestine. While I go and I have friends and I'm very well protected and very well received. So some of this fear is not even realistic. Some of it is built up, and we need to see to break it up into.
But it's built up over generations.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. This is why
I mean, it's the Holocaust mentality.
Of course. Yeah. This is why we need to free ourselves from this fear, because
yes.
we are punishing ourselves. We are suffering. We are, like Amal said, we are suffering. Mm. We are building a wall surrounding us. We are suffering instead of having partners and having yes. friendships and not living in a militaristic society.
We have Peter joining us next from Caledonia. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Excellent program. And I would just like to make a few simple comments here. You know, I look at it this way. As long as Israel keeps on stirring the pot over there and keeping up the turmoil, America will pour its wallets and totally disregard the other side, because the other side has to also be taken into consideration and has to be treated equally until mm-hmm. you can have some semblance of order over there. And mm-hmm. furthermore, we cannot be the broker to straighten this mess out. There has to be a third party, a totally independent party that is not supporting this chaos and that mess that's over there.
Mm. That's true.
Thank you, Peter.
I agree. As long as people are making money off this occupation, as long as investors are making money, as long as Caterpillar Company is making money off building the wall, selling bulldozers to Israel, weapons, trading weapons, this occupation will not end.
Yeah.
What about Oslo? What about the Norwegians? No good?
It didn't work because, again, not everyone was brought to this process. Not all rights were recognized. Again, the powerful had the power to change things on ground. The process became processes, and the negotiation became negotiations, and Oslo became more than one Oslo on ground.
I hear you saying that because Israel has the power, that they also they're the prime movers. Mm-hmm. But what is the role of Palestinians?
You mean the government now? It's a paralyzed government.
What is the role of the people?
The people are pushing for change. The people want peace. That's because they are the ones who are paying the price for it. And they can't afford continuing living in such a situation. But when you don't have power to do anything, you are totally powerless. You have no say. You can't change things.
Do you think suicide bombers represent power?
No, they represent despair.
So you have fear on one side and despair on the other.
Yes.
You know, we have a phenomenon in Palestine that the people who lose hope, they immigrate. And this is really very sad to happen. And some other people, they lose hope, they got more fanatic. Mm. And this is really sad phenomenon to happen in Palestine. We don't want...
Yeah, it's not part of our culture.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And again, these three women will be available this evening in the Humanities Building, room 2650, sponsored by the Middle East Studies Program. And they'll also be at the University of Wisconsin in Platteville tomorrow night, 7 to 9 p.m. tonight. Huda Abu Arkoub and Tal Dor and Amal Nasser. It's been a privilege to be with the three
good
of
pronunciation.
You.
Thank you so
thank you
much.
Very much.
Good show.
And you'll find links to Partners for Peace and the Jerusalem Women Speak Tour when you visit our website, hereonearth.org. You can also get a copy of today's program from the radio store, 1-800-747-7444. This is program number 416K. I'm Jean Faraca. Thanks for listening.